Shelter dogs come in, all different shapes and sizes. They have different quirks and personalities. And we have, I think, over 3 million dogs going to animal shelters every year. So finding loving homes for all of them certainly can be a challenge. And my next guest today is Amy Sutherland. She is the author of Rescuing Penny Jane, One Shelter Volunteer, Countless Dogs, and the Quest to Find Them All Homes. She has over 15 years of experience as a shelter volunteer, and she can certainly talk about dogs she's met along the way, what she's learned from working at a shelter, and answer your questions about shelter dogs. You may be interested in adopting a dog from your local shelter. I hope you'll join in. Give a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. And if, hey, you know what? If you've got a photo of your shelter dog and you want to post it up on The Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, we'd love to see that as well. I always get a kick out of seeing those photos. Amy Sutherland, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me, Larry.
It's great to hear your voice. I certainly enjoyed reading your book. Shelter dogs can be really lovable. What makes shelter dogs so lovable?
Oh, God. Well, I think, first off, dogs are super lovable, right? So they've got that going for them. And then I think in the world of shelter dogs, you know, what you're looking at is a range of mutts, essentially.
Yeah.
And so you just see this huge range of the many ways dogs can look. I mean, I don't know about you, but when I was growing up, most dogs were mutts.
Yeah.
And that sort of fell away for a long time. But in the shelter world, I'm happy to report they're all back.
they certainly are. Well, I have to say, I really enjoyed reading your book. It was a lot of fun, and well, sometimes it wasn't so much fun. There are things that happen that aren't so great, but there are so many inspiring things that happen, and certainly telling your own story was wonderful to hear. I thought it was interesting how you got involved in volunteering. And maybe you can talk about what inspired you to volunteer at an animal shelter.
Well, I had, you know, everybody's got the list of things they are planning to do or thinking about doing. And for years, I had wanted to volunteer at the animal shelter. Just had it in the back of my mind. And then after 9/11 happened and the World Trade Centers came down, I, like a lot of people, was not only very upset and saddened by that, but I also sort of brought home how short life was, and I thought, you know, I got to get busy. I can't keep dragging this to-do list around with me, and like most of us. And, you know, that one just rose to the top pretty quickly, and it turns out, you know, you can procrastinate it for years, but it's a pretty simple thing to do when you just call up and ask when the next orientation is.
and there are a variety of things that you can do. You got involved you started as a walker, somebody who walks the dogs, didn't you?
Right. So I started at I was living in Portland, Maine when I first started volunteering, and that shelter, the way you could volunteer was just to walk the dogs. They tended to have a number of largish dogs, so I learned pretty quickly that I could handle these bigger dogs who were pretty, you know, a lot of them are kind of like pent up because they just don't get out enough. So then when I went to volunteer at the Animal Rescue League in Boston, I sort of graduated quickly up the range of dogs I could work with, and then I was added to this group of volunteers that were trained to work with the most challenging dogs, which had until then been only staff-only dogs.
And by challenging, there were a variety of challenges, weren't there?
Right. So these dogs, what we call our red dogs, they're red for a variety of reasons. One of the one of the top reasons is they're what we call jumpy mouthies. Yeah. And jumpy mouthy is a common situation for a young-ish dog in the shelter, like a nine-month-old to, let's say, up to even 2 years. And these dogs are actually very common in shelters. And so they're super young. They might not have been socialized very well with people, or they not had they just might not have a lot of experience. And then when they get into the shelter, when they get overexcited, what they want to do is jump on you and grab at you with their mouth. They're not being aggressive, but they are grabbing at you with their mouth.
Yeah.
So that makes them challenging.
Yeah. And that whole business of being around other dogs, sometimes they're taken out of the litter or gone, you know, they didn't get that 8 weeks or so of training that the other pups and so forth provide.
Right. When a dog is in its litter, it's learning a lot of things, and one of which is it's learning how to play properly. And if a puppy's too rough with its mouth or play, the other puppies will correct it. If a puppy gets removed early from that, or also doesn't get to spend a lot of its rest of its young life playing, it never learns real play manners. So that's how a dog can sort of end up in that situation. But it can also happen to a dog who's just too cooped up, too overexcited. And the sad thing about this is it's actually it's a resolvable condition, but they make for hard adoptions because not many people want a dog jumping on them.
Yeah, and at least some of the shelters, there's a fair amount of training that does go on.
Yeah, we do training in our shelter, but I wrote a lot about my experience, but I traveled around the country, and one of the most impressive setups for jumpy mouthy dogs is down in Austin, Texas at Austin Pets Alive. And the trainer there who's just this great guy, Rick Caviani, he is a disciple of play group.
Amazing guy.
I know. You can see pictures of the play group online, but so they run two huge play groups every day, bringing these dogs in waves, and the ones that get along together all get to romp and go bananas. And they find that this really turns around these young jumpy mouthies, that they just need to play and whoop it up. And then they're worn out and, you know, they're ready to take a nap.
Ray and Rhinelander called and wondered if the animal rescue video that singer Sarah McLachlan did, did that have any effect on animal rescue?
You know, I can't speak to that directly. My guess is that it did. But there's two schools of thought about that. One school of thought is it's great. The other school of thought is if you make people too sad or upset, they tune it out. And that it actually can push people away from the rescue movement. And, you know, this is thinking that sort of influenced my book in the sense that I wanted to give people a sort of a guided tour of the current shelter world, and give them sort of just a understanding of it so that they could better engage in it. So I was just going to sort of lay it out and see this, show you this is how it works, this is what happens, this is what we're up against, here are the dogs, and then you decide what you want to do.
Yeah.
And instead of pulling on the heartstrings.
Yeah. You talk about foo-foos, those dogs that they come in and they go right out. I mean, they get...
Right.
There are a lot of dogs that doesn't happen with.
Yeah, I mean, we do have, we also call them plug and plays.
Yeah.
so the dogs that are just like ready to go. There was just one that came in over the weekend in Boston, this little 3-year-old Yorkie who's pretty close to a plug and play. But then we have dogs that either they come in with some issues or because of the strain of being in the shelter, they develop issues. And unfortunately, the longer they're there, the more likely this is to happen. And, you know, when I've helped with adoptions and I'm back in the kennels, it's really funny because people will say to me, oh, that dog looks really unhappy in that kennel. But they never ask to see him. I'm going to say, that's the one who needs to go home. That's why he looks sad.
The whole business about matching, the stories you tell about that are really interesting, and you get a little feisty about it too sometimes, and even angry at people.
Well, I mean, I'm just kind of feisty in general, so I'm just trying to keep a lid on it most of the time. But I have improved over time because I've become more understanding about, well, one, how important it is to have these dogs go home with people, and that, you know, there's a lot of dog lovers in the world who don't really know that much about dogs. That used to really aggravate me, but you know what? It's just how it is. And there's nothing wrong with that. And now I feel like my job is to help people learn more about this fabulous species.
Yeah, and you tell some great stories. And Penny Jane, of course, your the title of your book is Rescuing Penny Jane, who is a really that whole story is really interesting, Amy. And I don't want to even get you started on it right now because we're going to take a little break for the news here. Amy Sutherland, our guest, we'll talk with her some more about shelter dogs. I'm telling you, she has some really interesting facts in her book, but also a wonderful story about her own rescue efforts with Penny Jane. And we will hope you'll call in. 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. After the news, we'll be back. Although shelter dogs have become more popular, it's not always easy to find them the right home. And today we'll talk with our guest, Amy Sutherland, who is author of Rescuing Penny Jane, One Shelter Volunteer, Countless Dogs, and The Quest to Find Them All Homes. We'll talk about forming bonds with shelter dogs, what your dog can teach you about love, maybe. Have you adopted a shelter dog? How did you win your dog's trust? Let us know. Call us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page titled The Larry Mueller Show. And if you've got a photo of your shelter pet, we'd love to see it. And I tell you what, Amy Sutherland, we have lots of photos up on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show.
Oh, great.
So you've got to go to the page and take a look at it. There's lots of people are posting photos. Just one a great photo from Lori. She said Rosie and Owen, a photo of them. Owen's about he came to them about 10 years ago. They had been told he was deaf, but it turned out that because he'd been put in some not the best foster home situations, he had just stopped listening.
All
he needed was some love, and 2 years ago we had to have a leg amputated because of cancer, but he's just great today. And his little sister Rosie came to us about 4 years ago from a high kill shelter and is a delight. And that may be something to talk about. The fellow you talked about in San Francisco went into that shelter, if I'm not mistaken, and they were killing a lot of the dogs, and he just said, we're not going to do it.
Oh, right, Rich.
Rich.
Gino. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Rich is, you know, one of the best experiences of this book was spending time with Rich Avanzino because he's just a real visionary, but somebody who also can get down to the practicalities of making something change. And he is the father of the no-kill movement in this country, which he started when he was at the San Francisco SPCA back in the 1970s. Do you want me to tell the story how that started? Because it had to do with a dog.
Sure.
Okay, so this dog, Saito, this 12-year-old Sheltie, was brought to his shelter because her owner had killed herself. So the coroner contacted the shelter and they went and got her. And then they got a call from the deceased lawyer who said she was coming to get this dog, Saito, and to have her put down as the will instructed. And Rich Avanzino said, I don't think so. And he would not give her the dog. So they ended up in court. And as this court case went on, it became a big media sensation. And all these people sent Rich Avenzino letters who wanted to adopt Saito. A 12-year-old dog would have routinely been put down in shelters. Everybody would have assumed nobody would want a 12-year-old dog. But here are 3,000 people saying they want this dog. So he won the court case, which was huge. But more than anything, it really made Rich realize that there were homes for these ancient dogs, maybe for the, you know, the one-eyed dogs, maybe for the crazy dogs, maybe for, there were shelters who were even routinely putting black dogs down at that point, assuming nobody wanted them. So it really opened his eyes as to what was possible. And that's why, a lot of why we've come so far today.
Yeah, and he loved to be sued. He loved lawsuits.
Oh, I know. That was what he said is his goal was to be sued once a week. He did this program. I don't even know if I can say it on the air, but let's just say he offered money for people to round up other people's cats that hadn't been fixed, and they would pay them $10 for every cat they brought in, and in the shelter would fix them. And his whole goal was to be sued, and when he wasn't, he was disappointed.
Oh, man. Yeah, he sounds like a really, really interesting guy. Kind of an inspiring person, for sure. He's got to be a real spark plug.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to talk about your comments on fear. As I was, you know, as I was listening or as I was reading your book, and you're talking about why dogs bite or why sometimes they act the way they do or growl, it's often has to do with fear. And I was thinking to myself, well, that's exactly what Patricia McConnell would say.
Right.
Then I got to the middle of your book, and you're talking about Patricia. She and I did a call-in talk show about pets for a national show for many years, and you're in line with her thinking for sure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're lucky in the state of Wisconsin, you have one of the national leaders on dog behavior. And Patricia, and we're lucky, the rest of the country, that she's written so many fantastic books giving insight into how dogs behave. But still, one of the most misunderstood emotions in dogs is fear. People don't know the body language. We tend to have the wrong reaction to a dog that looks nervous. We tend to want to comfort it like we would a human by hugging it or petting it, when really a fearful dog would always prefer that you just left them alone. So those, you know, these are dogs that can seem manageable. I mean, they're not jumping on you and grabbing you, you know, hysterically, yeah, like it's fun and games. So they seem like they can be okay, and then when they come home, a lot of people run into problems because they don't understand what they're dealing with.
And your dog Penny Jane was one that wanted to be alone.
Yeah, I have some experience with a fearful dog. So Penny Jane was like I don't know if this is the right term. Penny Jane showed me what I was capable of doing for a dog. I mean, I was able to do more than I realized. And she was a real trial because she came home. She's a real sweet-looking 8-month-old mix, kind of with border collie markings, real pretty. But I knew she had been picked up as a stray on a farm and that she probably never lived with people before, but I didn't understand what that meant now. Now I totally understand what that means. It means, you know, uh-oh, it's what it means. And when I brought her home, she was terrified of the house. She was terrified of doors. She was terrified of stairs. She was terrified of me and my husband. And so we essentially had this kind of like, it was like having a coyote live in your house. Yeah, it was a real adventure.
Well, I love how you tell that, how you tell the story, and you got to read the book if you're going to learn all about it. Kathleen, we have so many callers online. Let's just take some calls. Kathleen and Delavan, thank you for calling.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to tell people or mention to people that don't have a preconceived idea of what you're looking for when you go to a shelter. I just adopted one in December from a shelter where my granddaughter volunteered, and as a companion for my other one. And I never wanted a tiny dog. I always said I would never, ever have a tiny dog. And I never wanted a chihuahua, and I would never even consider a dachshund. And I couldn't find the dog, so I'm finally leaving, and they said, well, have you seen Ginger? And I'm like, well, what's Ginger? I didn't see anything I was interested in. Oh, she's a tweenie. And I'm like, no, I'm not really interested, you know. She said, well, just let me bring her out. So she brings her out. And his dog, she was bounding up to me. Her tail was going a mile a minute. She was kissing me. She was all over me. She loved my other dog that was with me. And bottom line is, I adopted this 8-pound dog, who is probably the best dog I've ever had. And everybody who sees her, they just, this is the most amazing dog. So don't have a preconceived idea, you know, and just go with who you fall in love with.
No.
Yeah. That's a great point. I mean, I have a similar story in my book. If you read it, it's got to do with I didn't want a small dog. I didn't want a Jack Russell. I didn't even want a male dog. I don't know what that came out of. Don't ask me. But let's just say fate had their way with me. So don't never say never. And you're exactly right. You should just keep your mind open. People come in with preconceived ideas about breeds and size. And you should just really look for who these dogs are individually, because they're all different.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Kathleen. I really appreciate your call. This is wonderful. Janet in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Janet.
Hi. How are you guys doing?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to share with your listeners, I have a shelter dog, Shaylee, who we've had for 6 years now. We adopted her at 8 months. From our local shelter in Milwaukee. And it has been the 5 best years of my life with this dog. She's a Border Collie Aussie mix, so just very, very high energy, active, playful, and she's a 2-walk-a-day dog. you know, walking her twice is a good thing. But, it's just been an incredible experience. It's my first time as a dog owner. My husband and I had just gotten married, and it's just fun for us to get outside when it's cold, when it's drizzling. You just see really incredible things out on your local trail that you wouldn't normally see in January or February. You really do see the best wildlife in the winter.
Well, thanks, Janet, for calling. Comment, Amy?
Well, I mean, you know, the thing is that there's so many studies, but I don't think we even need them, right, to know how good dogs are for us, just in general, wherever they come from. But I think shelter dogs are especially satisfying because, I mean, how many times do you get to do something that was really a good thing and then have so much fun doing it, right? I wanted to add that I had an Australian Shepherd with my first dog, and I lost 8 pounds. Throwing a frisbee from that dog. So that's going to be my next book is going to be The Dog Diet. Get a dog, lose 10 pounds.
Oh, man. Patricia in Waukesha, your turn. Thanks, Patricia, for calling.
Yes, I just have a sweet story. Hope I can get through this. I was grieving for my husband and went to a shelter with my daughter. She was looking for a pal for her Rhodesian Ridgeback. I was not interested in a dog, but I sat there and waited for my daughter to see all the dogs she wanted. And as they were parading through, this darling little white dog walked along. I've always had Golden, so I wasn't interested at all. But she came over, and so I petted her. Well, guess what? And then they said, well, you know, she is 11. It's hard to adopt a dog at 11. We want you to be sure. Didn't bother me a bit. I brought her home. She's 17. And still, I can't say she's going strong. She does have some problems, and I can see that it won't be too long. But if people really could understand what they can mean when the person is in need. So there you are.
Right.
You've adopted a shelter dog. You've changed your life. And All because you went with your daughter to look at a dog.
Right.
Oh, thank you so much for calling, Patricia. Amy, a comment?
Well, that's just a great story. I mean, that just speaks to the how important that deep bond can be to people. And I see that all the time when I'm helping match people with dogs, and I watch them fall in love. I just think that people are far less guarded with their emotions, if they're guarded at all, with dogs. And it's just I think for the human heart, it's like incredibly liberating to just love with that level of abandon that you can with a dog.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
People realize what a treasure a dog is for an older person who isn't out and about bounding around playing bridge and all that sort of thing, which is wonderful to do. But this little dog has just been such good company. It's just company.
Yeah.
And besides, she's adorable.
Yeah.
Oh.
There are programs, speaking to her point, that some shelters are running programs where they do adoptions of seniors to seniors, often for either really low cost or for free, to get the senior dogs, you know, find homes, which sometimes they do have trouble finding homes. And that's one of the sort of the new ways of thinking that are helping more dogs get out of shelters.
Thank you again, Patricia. I want to give Beverly in Marquette, Iowa, a chance to join us as well. Beverly, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hello. I was wondering, do you know anything about the Witness Protection Program for dogs? My daughter lives in another state and does a lot of foster work with all animals. And she called last night, and they have one dog that's in the Witness Protection Program, and she cannot take it out on a leash. It has to stay in the house. She can't show anyone a picture of the dog. What is the Witness Protection Program?
Well, I think I haven't heard that term before, but what I think this is a dog that's involved with a legal case. So when dogs are involved with a legal case, either as they're the center of it, say it could be a cruelty case, or if they are being used for illegal activities, or they've been confiscated for some reason that is leading to a court case, the dogs have to be held as evidence. This is a real this is an issue in the shelter world, because if a case takes years to come to court, these dogs have to be held until then. So they have to remain homeless. So it's great that this dog is in a foster setting, because that's the best setting for a dog. But a lot of shelters are holding these dogs for court cases. I know of a case where dogs were held for 2 years.
And had to be essentially in a crate most of the time.
Well, everybody's got sort of different rules about it. The dogs I know about were at the Boston Animal Control, and I think they got very little, they got very minimal care. At our shelter, when we have dogs, we call them law enforcement dogs. They will often limit where they can be walked outside or who are the volunteers that can take them out. They will have some constraints on them.
Oh.
Well, the dog is very pregnant, so I think that's why they don't want to keep her in the shelter.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. Well, that's a great program for your daughter to be involved with.
Yeah, it sure is. Thanks, Beverly. Appreciate it. Cindy in Conover, your turn. Hi, Cindy.
Hello.
And what have you got for us?
Well, I had adopted a puppy. I found her on PetFinder.com, and she had been brought up with the rest of her litter from a high kill shelter in Kentucky. And she's about four now, and she's proved wonderful. But the reason I wanted to call in was when I got her, she was very submissive, and the submissive urination, which has continued as an adult, and I understand what it is, and there's nothing that can really be done. But it just gives me the shudders to think that somebody else may have adopted a dog like that and not realized it and, you know, really beat on her or hurt her and ended up ultimately being put down for something that wasn't her fault.
Yeah.
Well, I think in a lot of cases, probably, I mean, you're right to be concerned about those other issues, but I think what happens a lot is our dogs like that are returned. So then they end up bouncing in, bouncing out, bouncing in, bouncing out until they land on somebody like you. I mean, in the case of my super fearful dog, if I had returned her to the shelter, that was one of the reasons that I didn't return her, is because I couldn't imagine who else would put up with having a coyote in their house.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of adopters out there, right? There's people who want plug and plays. We got dogs for them. We got people who are, can handle behavior challenges. We got people who don't mind having dogs jump on them and grab at them.
Mm-hmm.
We have people who want really old dogs. So, the idea is that there's no one kind of dog, and there's also no one kind of adopter.
Thank you so much, Cindy, for calling. Appreciate your call. That whole business of returns, you deal with that. I mean, you had one attitude about returns, and we're a little surprised, or heartened by some of the findings of research on why people return dogs. There's a sort of a feeling out there that, if the dog doesn't match the decor of the house or something, they're going to be
right. Yeah, people tell stories like that all the time, but in fact, it's. I think it's way more complicated than that for the people who surrender their animals, and a lot of people I think who surrender their animals for either monetary reasons or the condition of their life or domestic life, they get the feeling like they really have their back up against a wall for multiple reasons. And that's how pets end up in the shelter. So what's really behind animals going into the shelter are usually people problems. So the animal shelter world has been focused on just working on the animal, but more and more sort of visionary people are realizing that to find all the dogs' homes, you're going to have to start working on the people problems too.
Yeah. Mary in Milwaukee has a question. Mary, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for this opportunity. We have a rescue dog who we think is in the last weeks of his life. He's in his 11th year. Because of our age, we choose not to adopt again because we want to be there for the dog for his whole life. But we're considering fostering a dog or dogs from a shelter and are interested in your knowledge of the challenges of doing so, and this being challenges to the person. We know the pluses for the dog, but what challenges might we?
And you've done fostering, and it can be tough. In about 30 seconds, can you give us a response, Amy?
Well, two things is, one, there's different ways to foster, and you might want to pick whether you want to have a dog that's getting over medical problems versus dogs that just needs a home. And then, of course, the problem is going to be when you give the dog back.
Yeah.
Right. So you just have to get brace yourself and get, it's not going to be easy, but that's your job as a foster.
And that's the time. You've done it and you've experienced it and you've had some wonderful experience. We didn't get into a half of what you cover in your book, Amy, but it's been a real pleasure to talk with you today. Thank you so much for writing the book, and thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you, Larry. I've really enjoyed this.
It's been a lot of fun. Amy Sutherland is the author of Rescuing Penny Jane, One Shelter Volunteer, Countless Dogs, and the Quest to Find Them All Homes. A great read, and I'm sure you're going to enjoy taking a look at it. Amy Sutherland. We'll get her back, talk with her again. She's fun to talk with, isn't she? Oh, man. Tomorrow, PJ Leash comes back from the Insect Diagnostic Lab at the UW-Madison. In the meantime, please stay with us. Lots more in store.